Montanans turn out to remember and honor those who serve and have given the ultimate sacrifice for their nation. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. We'll also take you to a whitewater festival in Big Fork.
And in our feature interview, news director Sally Mock talks with Whitney Williams, whose dad, Pat, served 18 years as Montana's representative in the U.S. House. Her mom, Carol, wielded significant power in the state legislature. The 87th Annual Memorial Day Ceremonies in Missoula featured events presented from the banks of the Clark Fork River to the county courthouse to the Western Montana State Veterans Cemetery. In fact, there were 11 ceremonies altogether. Clouds and scattered showers may have affected turnout at the very first event at Karis Park, where a wreath was tossed into the swollen Clark Fork River. About 40 people showed up, which seemed a little lower than years past. Terry Ziba started his Navy career in 1971. He stayed on active duty for 4 years. Between that and his time in the reserves, he spent some 30 years with the branch.
I liked the job I was doing. I believed in what I was doing. And my shipmates, my comrades, the camaraderie, the feeling of doing something necessary for strong national defense.
Ziba told Edward O'Brien he attended today's Memorial Day ceremony for a very special and very specific reason.
This was one of my people that we lost in Iraqi freedom, and I'm here for her, and I'm here for other shipmates and military comrades that paid the ultimate sacrifice for all of us.
What was her name?
Regina Clark. She was a petty officer, first class, with the Seabees, and she was had just finished a long day at a checkpoint doing inspections of Iraqi women going through the checkpoint, and their convoy was attacked, and she was killed.
Bertha Krogan, Theresa Wilmer, and Sandy Dorset were offering paper poppies on behalf of the American Legion Auxiliary. Wilmer says the poppy symbol was created after a World War I battle.
Flanders Field was where a terrible war happened during World War I with unimaginable casualties. And then after the war was over, that field just grew up with poppies. And so this is the memorial for the soldiers that had fallen there.
The United Veterans Council of Ravalli and Missoula Counties organized the local Memorial Day ceremonies as they have since 1994.
And in other news from around the state, the chairman of the U.S. Senate Indian Affairs Committee says he wants the Obama administration to address the dissatisfaction that's hobbling the federal Indian Health Service. U.S. Senator John Tester has invited tribal leaders from Montana and Wyoming to a field hearing tomorrow amid rising dissatisfaction over poor or delayed care on reservations. The Montana Democrat earlier this month requested an investigation by the U.S. Government Accountability Office after complaints from the Crow Tribe about the Indian Health Service Area Office in Billings. A 2010 Senate investigation examined the health service in North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Iowa. It uncovered hospitals at risk of losing their accreditation, a shortage of providers, missing or stolen narcotics, and improperly licensed staff.
A Montana State prison inmate who died last week had a criminal record that included bank robberies and bombings in New England in the 1970s, a murder in Arkansas prison in the 1980s, and attempted murder and kidnapping in Montana. Prison officials say Joseph Aceto died May 20th at the prison infirmary after an extended illness. He was 61. Aceto was serving a 220-year term after being convicted of shooting Rocky Horner at his Columbia Falls Art Gallery and kidnapping his former girlfriend, Eileen Holmquist, in May 2000. But his criminal record stretched across the country and included 21 felony convictions.
A sentencing date has been set for a man who pleaded no contest for stabbing two sisters to death in January 2012 in their apartment. Andrew Denning is expected to face Judge Mary Jane McCullough-Kinesley on August 19th. In May, Denning pleaded no contest to two counts of deliberate homicide for the killing of Daisy and Rose Edwards. Billings police say Denning arrived at the Ponderosa Apartments to exchange sleeping pills for money, but the deal went sour. Prosecutors are asking for a sentence of 100 years in prison. According to KULR-TV, Denning told authorities he did not know why he killed the two sisters.
Brought to you by ALEC, a new documentary airing on Montana PBS this week, explores what effect the American Legislative Exchange Council has had on Montana's laws. ALEC is a national group that brings together publicly elected officials and business interests to draft model legislation. Producer Anna Rao says she first became alerted to the group while working on a previous documentary about energy corporations in Montana.
dozens of other states that passed electricity deregulation had the same ideas, same concepts. And then I figured out there was kind of a nexus where corporations that wanted to see electricity deregulation happen, mainly Enron, got together and worked on a model bill. And then the model bill went out to all the different states, and ALEC is where they got together and did that.
Rao says the language of the model bills, which are drafted in secret task forces where the legislators vote alongside private businesses, often makes it into real bills in the state house.
There are bills that I found in the last two sessions, at least a half dozen bills, where it's completely matching language. So there'll be a model bill that is now, I mean, ALEC recently opened their website. It didn't used to be open, so you could see their model legislation. But I think March of last year is when they opened it up, and then you could clearly see, this is an ALEC model bill. Now I'm going to take and cross-reference this with some Montana bills.
The documentary was filmed with the cooperation of two Montana legislators. Rao says they thought that ALEC was a useful resource.
I think that they felt like it was a great learning experience for them. They saw it as a way to hear the business perspective that they think is often missing in policymaking. And they also saw it as an opportunity to network with other lawmakers.
Rao says that ALEC, which claims it isn't a lobbying organization, is involved in activities that might fit that definition.
It is hard sometimes to comply with all laws in all states and keep up with those things. But I think there's been so much of what they were doing and so many action alerts and so many bills they testified on and so many ways that they kind of get involved in getting a bill passed and an idea passed that critics have really gone after them.
Brought to you by ALEC, premieres on Montana PBS at 8 o'clock tomorrow night and again at 7 on Thursday.
A Billings businessman has signed a $1.5 million bequest to the University of Montana for athletic facility improvements. Jim Hillaby is a 1967 graduate of UM. University of Montana Assistant Athletic Director for Development Dan Ingram says the money will be available after Hillaby's death to be used on whatever facilities the athletic department needs at that time. Current facility needs include a new softball complex, a new weight room, and a football locker room. The 69-year-old Hillaby founded Hillaby Construction in Billings.
The Montana Department of Revenue is holding an auction beginning next month to sell unclaimed safe deposit box contents. For the first time, the state will auction the items online because officials believe online auctions reach more bidders and fetch better prices. Items to be auctioned include coins, jewelry, and collectibles that banks and credit unions have held for more than 5 years and have turned over to the state. According to KTVH-TV, the department tries to find the original owners before putting the property up for auction. If the property is sold, the state will hold the net proceeds from the auction until the rightful owners of the property or their heirs can claim their portion.
Montana wildlife officials plan another attempt to reintroduce wild sheep to parts of the Madison Range and are reconsidering a second introduction to the Paradise Valley. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks had planned to capture bighorn sheep from the Quake Lake herd this past winter and transplant them to the Wolf Creek drainage farther north. The plans were canceled after three animals from the herd died of pneumonia. Wildlife commissioners on Thursday gave officials approval to try again after mortality at Quake Lake herd ended up being low. The Bozeman Chronicle reports officials are investigating a second transplant of the sheep to the Missouri Breaks to the Livingston Peak area on the Paradise Valley. The state plan calls for five new bighorn sheep transplants by 2022.
Memorial Day weekend officially kicks off the summer. In the Flathead, the summer rushes in with whitewater kayakers, rafters, and paddleboarders heading to Big Fork for the annual Whitewater Festival. Flathead reporter Katrin Fry sends this audio postcard from the 39th annual event, where local Big Fork kayaker John Myers emcees the beginner slalom and stand-up paddleboard race from the shore of the Swan River.
All right, looks like Dan, he's coming up for this last upstream gate. Digging pretty hard. This water is high and fast.
My name is Hillary Shepherd. I am an event organizer and sponsor. My shop's the Big Fork Mountaineer. But right now, the river is running at 5.15 feet. Flood stage on this river is 6.5, so that's pretty good flow. We're actually running at 4250 CFS, so lots of water pushing through.
Our next competitor on the course is Matt Rusher out there in his bright yellow Glide stand-up paddleboard. It's pretty tricky to like have to cope with the turbulent waters out there when the water's high this time of year, but it looks like Matt's totally on it. He sees his line and he's just flying up that eddy.
My name is Austin Crisp, and I guess I'm the gatekeeper. We're looking for clean entry and exit of all the gates. If you bump them, you get a 5-second penalty. If you miss it, it's a 50. So ideally, these guys are really just trying to be smooth, clean, and make all the gates. So right now he's entering the gate, and I'm keeping an eye to see if those gates are bumped or moved. Looks like he bumped it right there. So it's a 5-second penalty, but he stayed up, which is really cool. That's a really tough eddy to make, especially on a paddleboard, because you got to balance into that current, and but still stay upright with a lot of fast-moving water pushing downstream.
Okay, it looks like Raphael just took a little plunge there, hopping back up onto a stand-up paddleboard. This is no easy feat on a stand-up paddleboard.
Nice. Made the eddy. That's impressive.
Tucker Nadeau, and I competed in the lower slalom for kayaking. Yeah, so first you just start out, you're just going to paddle up through this eddy right here, and you've got the first upstream gate, which is red, and it's right in the eddy, which is water that's moving the opposite way of the regular current. And you're going to get through that, and then you're going to try to paddle to the other side of the river a little bit, get in the middle, and try to get through three downstream gates, which are green, and you just got to wind through them. And then you got to come across the river, and there's this last upstream gate. You come around that, and then you make a really hard paddle across, and last gate's right under the bridge, and yeah. I just love being in the water. I like the rush it gives me.
Nice, totally lacing the gates down there. Way to go. Put your hands together for our last stand-up paddleboard competitor. I'm going to drink so many beers today.
All watercraft entering Yellowstone National Park must be inspected for aquatic invasive species. National Park Service staff conduct inspections 7 days a week at the Bridge Bay and Grant Village boat ramps at the South Entrance Ranger Station. Boats intended for use on Lewis Lake must be inspected at Grant Village or the South Entrance before launching. All motorized and non-motorized watercraft, including float tubes, must also have a Yellowstone boat permit. The Park Service says Grand Teton National Park permits no longer are valid for boating in Yellowstone. Boat and float tube permits can be purchased at various park facilities. Motorized boating is only allowed in Yellowstone and Lewis Lakes, while non-motorized boating is allowed on many other park lakes.
A second medical helicopter has been stationed in eastern Idaho to respond to medical emergencies in Yellowstone National Park. The Post Register reports that the Bell 407GX helicopter at the Eastern Idaho Regional Medical Center in Idaho Falls started operating May 1st. The $4 million helicopter is operated by Air Methods Corporation, an emergency medical services company that has a fleet of more than 400 medical transport helicopters around the nation. The helicopter serving Yellowstone National Park is staffed with a pilot, nurse, and paramedic. It'll operate from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week. The helicopter is scheduled to operate to the end of September when the tourist season starts winding down.
To say Whitney Williams grew up in a political family is a bit of an understatement. Her father, Pat, served 18 years as Montana's representative in the U.S. House. Her mother, Carol, was the first woman to serve as both majority and minority leader in the state Senate. Whitney worked on several political campaigns, served as the trip director for First Lady Hillary Clinton, and is now the founder and CEO of Seattle-based public policy and philanthropic firm known as WilliamWorks. Williams was in Missoula recently to speak at a local Democratic function hosted by her parents. She also took time to sit down in our studios with news director Sally Mock to talk about her family's political legacy.
Really proud of my history and legacy and my family's in Montana, and was delighted to be back here in Missoula to talk about some of my favorite people.
When we think of heroes, especially female heroes in Montana, I think we do always think of Rankin.
Yeah.
And your family knew Jeanette. She was still alive.
They did. They were, mom and dad were in 1970 in Washington, D.C. Jeanette was in Washington. She had been asked to come lead a march of women protesting the Vietnam War. And so she went back, and mom and dad were delighted to be there and met with her after at her 90th birthday party. Mom asked her, Jeanette, how do you keep up your sort of energy and determination after all these many years of sort of fighting this good fight? And Jeanette said, oh, my dear, No one ever said it was easy. They only said it was right, which I thought was such a poignant and beautiful sort of statement. And then Dad asked her, what do you want to be remembered for? She had had so many, things she could have been remembered for. And certainly those two war votes and the controversial one, particularly at World War II. She said, Pat, thank you for asking, because people think it's the war votes. But I actually want to be remembered as the only woman who cast a vote to give women the right to vote. Amazing, right? Uh-huh. Incredible, incredible. And I just think that that incredible history that Montana has of these women leaders should be known and remembered. So I was pleased to talk about it.
And some women in your family started a labor union in Butte.
That's right. My great-grandmas and aunties in 1893 helped start the Women's Protective Union, which was the nation's longest-lasting all-female union. And it was it lasted up until 1973. And in their long history, they had a remarkable sort of success in organizing around minimum wage and Social Security and things like that. But they also were very, very focused on making sure that the sort of face of the working class was respected and sort of understood. And this union has this beautiful long history. One of the former presidents of the union, a woman named Val Webster, I had a chance to do some oral history work with her. As a student here at the University of Montana, I had a chance to go to Butte and archive some of that history and talked with Val. And I had expected when I was archiving the work to find lots of picket signs and old photos and things. And I only found one like sort of proper picket sign the way that we think about them today. And I said, Val, why were there no picket signs? Now, I had found this beautiful group of sort of silk yellow, really thin, beautiful banners with slogans written on them. So I brought that in and said, so why haven't I found any picket signs and what is this? And she said, I'm glad you asked that. That is a picket sign. And I said, what? I mean, it's just this small yellow silk banner. And she said, no, it's a picket sign. We pinned it to our shirts. And we walked the picket line. She said, darling, you can't carry a child and a picket sign at the same time, which I thought was terrific.
You're the child of very political parents. And sometimes the children of whatever their parents are doing, you don't want to do or be involved in. But that's not true for you. You have carried on the heritage in terms of being an active, socially conscious person.
Yeah, that's right. It really is a total luck, of course, that I got born into the family I did. But I think along with my brother Griff and sister Erin, have a real sense of obligation and service, and we have always had that in our lives. And I've sort of chosen a path of not elected service, but public service in my own way. Started a company out in Seattle about 10 years ago that's a social impact consulting firm, and we help individuals and corporations make great things happen in the world and find ways to give back.
Some of these individuals that you help are quite well-known people. Bill and Melinda Gates of the Gates Foundation, Ben Affleck, the actor, and these are people who have resources to make a difference. You help them figure out how best to use those resources, right?
Yeah, that's right. So we do. We have a set of clients who are certainly well-known, like you mentioned, Bill and Melinda and Ben Affleck, and then we have some other clients who are less well-known, but all with assets and a determination to sort of leave the world a better place. And my company helps folks sort of navigate what are pretty complicated and confusing ideas and places and help them figure out the best way to give back. So we work on issues here in the U.S. as well as issues across the globe, particularly in Africa.
One initiative is called the Eastern Congo Initiative that you head up, and it's with Ben Affleck. And that is such a complicated area. Mm-hmm. And I was reading something that somebody said, you know, every time I talk about Africa, people's eyes glaze over. Mm-hmm. You have to fight that, don't you, as well?
You do. Yeah? You sure do. And I think it's certainly complicated, and this work is not easy. But I think there's also, you know, not unlike these sort of values that I talked about the other night here in Missoula, this sort of determination to make the world a better place, whether it's sort of folks living on a dollar a day in a place like Congo in the middle of a war zone or people here, you know, in Missoula. The Eastern Congo Initiative is a really extraordinary undertaking. It's 4 years old this year, and Ben and I started it together and have been really proud to see some of the extraordinary progress. We have one sort of many stories, but one that's really fun is we've been working with a group of smallholder farmers in Congo who are cocoa farmers. And it turns out that Congo has a really beautiful cocoa product. The cocoa that's grown there is really exceptional. And so Ben and I decided to see if we couldn't try to open up markets here in the U.S. for that cocoa, which was not exported at all from Congo until we got involved. And now there's a Seattle-based chocolate company, the fastest-growing chocolate company in America, actually, called Theo Chocolate, that is now buying 640 tons of cocoa from these farmers who we've been helping to train. And the chocolate bars are delicious. They're for sale here in Missoula. I think the co-op has them. I think Good Food Store has them. But it's all this Congolese cocoa, which is dramatically improving the communities. You know, the prices, they're getting fair wages for this cocoa, which means they can, you know, send their kids to school or get medical care or buy a, you know, bed net to stave off malaria. And so it's a fun way for people here in the U.S. too, to be able to buy a chocolate bar, support, you know, the work of these great farmers.
Can't let you go, Whitney, without talking a little bit of politics with you. You were the trip advisor and trip organizer, I think, for Hillary Clinton when she was first lady. It must have been a great job. Stressful too, I'm sure. But you learned a lot doing that, I bet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Hillary's extraordinary. After I graduated from the university here, I got a job in the White House working for her and was with her for about 3 years and have stayed in really close contact with her, and certainly going to be a big supporter if she, in fact, decides to run for president, which I very much hope she will. She's unbelievable. You know, she's just incredibly smart, really kind, someone who is, you know, absolutely determined, like we talk about our other Montana heroes, to make the world a better place. And it was a, you know, incredible experience for a kid from Montana to be able to travel to 40-something countries with her and 40-something states. And
what an education.
Incredible.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, it was, certainly had a real experience around Dad's life when he was in the Congress for all those years when I was growing up, and knew a lot about the legislative branch, but had never had any, you know, sort of exposure to the executive branch. So being able to work that closely with such a powerful woman like, you know, Hillary all those years was remarkable, and it, you know, wouldn't have, my life sort of today is, you know, changed because of it.
Knowing her as you do, what do you think she's weighing now in deciding whether to run? Because right now her reputation has never been higher after being a successful Secretary of State. And to go through the grueling 2 or 3 years of campaigning for president, which she's already done, and take the slings and arrows that comes with that, what do you think she's weighing in her decision?
Yeah, I think, you know, she genuinely feels the obligation to serve. So the question is, what's the best way to do that? And certainly, I imagine it's got to be tough for her every day. You know, people have been asking her. They hope she'll do it. You know, there's this group Ready for Hillary and lots of others.
Oh, there's a campaign who've already begun.
Oh, yeah, who've organized around her. I think she is very focused on a couple things right now. The work of her foundation, you know, it's been recently renamed the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation. She's very focused on some activities she's doing there. She's finishing a book, which should be out soon, later this year. And she's getting ready to be a grandma. And I think that those things are all, you know, top of mind for her. And obviously, this is something she's got to make a decision about sometime next year. And it's a, you know, it's a big and complicated question. I think the question for her is not, do I continue to make big things happen in the world? And do I continue to do, you know, extraordinary work? But it's, how do I do that? And running for president is obviously a tough job, and certainly being president is a tough job. So I think for, you know, all of our sake, I hope she'll do it, but we'll see.
One final question for you. If she does, do you see yourself being part of a Hillary Clinton administration in any way, shape, or form?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll do everything I can to help her get elected. And my hope would be, I did that last time from Seattle. I was her finance co-chair in the state of Washington, and I will continue to help in that way. And if she needed me and I was the best person to help her out, I'd certainly do anything I could to help her and this country be successful.
Well, I've been speaking with Whitney Williams, a Montana native, very active in philanthropy and politics. And Whitney, it's just a pleasure to chat with you about all this. Thank you.
Thanks, Sally.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight, it is partly cloudy with isolated showers and thunderstorms. Lows are in the 30s to lower 40s. Tuesday should be partly cloudy with scattered thunderstorms and a chance of rain showers, with highs in the 70s. In central Montana tonight, it's mostly cloudy. that will become partly cloudy later in the evening with a slight chance of thunderstorms even later. Slight chance of rain showers through the night with lows 40 to 50. Tuesday should be partly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon. In southwest Montana tonight, it is partially cloudy. Isolated showers and thunderstorms in the evening with lows from 35 to 45 degrees. On Tuesday, there will be increasing clouds with a chance of thunderstorms in the afternoon and highs from 70 to 75 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Julia Altimus.
At 3 o'clock today, every American was asked to stop and take a moment to pause, remember, and pay special tribute to our nation's men and women who have made the ultimate service and sacrifice in the pursuit of freedom and of the liberties we all presently enjoy. Even though many of us visited our loved ones at a cemetery this Memorial Holiday, it is important to remember what this day signifies and pay homage to our fallen soldiers and the millions of veterans whose only public marker may be that of a gravestone. This Memorial Day, we honor those who have died in service to our country, veterans who have moved on, and thank the many men and women currently serving in our armed forces. In this modern age of public rancor and ideological division, it is only fitting that we pause and remember the words carved into the Korean War Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C., that freedom is not free. These words are not about the cost of defending our freedom. It is the fact that the rights and freedoms defined in our U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights were paid by their ultimate sacrifice. America was built through the exercise of free speech and the protection of individual rights to assure a representative democracy. We hold our First Amendment rights sacred, and yet the strident tenor of contemporary American discourse is threatening our cherished democracy and only serves to impair the development of sound policy. Freedom of speech and the values of civil discourse should go hand in glove, but sadly it doesn't. Treating others with dignity and respect, even when we strongly disagree, should be a priority of every community. Civil discourse is described as a language of dispassionate objectivity. It requires respect of the other participants. It neither diminishes the other's moral worth nor questions their good judgment. It avoids hostility, direct antagonism, and excessive persuasion. It requires modesty and an appreciation for the other participants' experiences. Civil discourse is intended to enhance understanding. It is not the absence of critical analysis. It is the manner in which we share the territorial freedom of discussion. Yes, we all have the right to yell and scream our opinions, but being uncivil does not lay the foundation or opportunity to engage in civil discourse, nor does it pay homage to the 1.17 million Americans who paid the ultimate sacrifice for your right to do so. Sadly, incivility seems to be the norm anymore, especially lately when it comes to discussions around public land management in Montana. Internet blogs and comment fields have become a cesspool and incubator for incivility. The vitriol expressed has taken on new dimensions to the point of deceit and downright bullying. Really? Is this the best we can do? I would like to suggest to those that apparently believe the way to sway public policy is to take up a poison pen to remember your right to free speech was paid for by the blood of a nation, and you dishonor their memory when you choose this course. It is important to remember that it is the veteran, not the preacher, who gave us freedom of religion. It is the veteran, not the reporter, who gave us freedom of the press. It is the veteran, not the campus organizer, who gave us the freedom to assemble. It is the veteran, not the lawyer, who gave us the right to a fair trial. It is a veteran, not the politician, who gave us the right to vote. And it is a veteran, not the poet, who gave us the freedom of speech. As we take time to pause, reflect, and pay tribute to those who have died for freedom and liberty, they sacrifice their own hopes and dreams to preserve the hope of a nation. And to remember, because those that fought the fight, the duty is now ours. We best honor our fallen soldiers, our veterans, and our active military by not only caring for the living, but by caring of the living. This is our duty, to do good works, to contribute, to be tolerant, and to be respectful. On behalf of the Montana Wood Products Association, I am Julia Altimus. Thanks for listening.
Julie Altimus is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. These expressed don't necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening, and please join Edwin O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.